Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, a council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is nestled between Norristown, PA, and King of Prussia, PA, a little bit east and west, a little bit west of Philadelphia, not east at all. But we're going even further west than a little bit outside of Philadelphia. We're going all the way out to Omaha, Nebraska for today's podcast with someone who I've been very impressed with from the little bit I've read so far. Her name is Megan Hunt. She's a state senator in Nebraska. And just to give you a little bit of info about her, because she'll talk about it more than I will, her family's been in Nebraska since Nebraska was a thing, as far as I can tell. And she is an entrepreneur. She's been a founder and vice president of Safe Space Nebraska, which works to end harassment and assault in nightlife establishments. And she's been on the boards of many other organizations, including Friends of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, Friends of Nebraska AIDS Project, and Omaha Area Youth Orchestras. She has been doing many things in her community to the point where I feel exhausted just reading her bio. So I hope you'll read more about her, but you'll learn about her today as we talk about why she got involved in politics and why she's making a difference in Nebraska and why you, yes, you, should maybe run for office too wherever you are. So, Megan, thank you so much for calling in today.
Tony, thank you so much for having me, and that was a very generous, sweet introduction, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
I assume it was all correct.
Yeah, that's about right.
So, I told you when we were communicating via Twitter, I've spent a little bit of time in Omaha. It must feel weird that, like, every person running for president is, like, across the river, and they're like, yeah, we don't really care about Omaha right now. You guys will ignore. Is that how it feels sometimes?
It does feel like that, but also in Omaha, we have a lot of donors, especially mm-hmm. Democratic donors. We kind of call ourselves the little blue dot in Nebraska because we have a pretty big progressive population, and we also have a lot of philanthropists in Omaha who get involved in politics. So once in a while, we can go across the river and see presidential candidates, but they often come to Omaha for events too, and we're lucky to have them here for that.
So you... Is that why you've always been political? Have you always been political? Is that what it's like there?
You know, I don't know. I've always been a very political person in that I have always been, I've always been a reader of the news. You know, I grew up reading the newspaper and having really strong opinions about what was happening in the world. But like a lot of people in the Midwest, I come from a conservative Republican family. So I grew up, with some of those, I guess I would call them kind of common sense conservative values, like from a pretty moderate family. And a lot of progressives and Democrats in the Midwest come from the same kind of background. And so I wasn't really raised in a super political way. It was just kind of like everyone in my family was Republicans and that was it. But the older I got and... I got involved in the nonprofit community, I started volunteering for organizations, and I started to realize that people were kind of seeing me as a political leader potentially, and so that's when I started to sort of think about the best way to utilize my skills and my strengths, and maybe that would be to get involved in politics in an official way.
Now, you've always been political, but you're even younger than I am, though I'm not young anymore. I can't be in young elected officials, though I appreciate the group. Do you remember any, like, your first political memories, like the first things that I remember my parents arguing over like the Clinton-Bush election in 92. Do you have any sort of like things that like, yeah, I was thinking about that way back when?
Well, I remember the Bush-Clinton, the first Bush-Clinton campaign election when I was in first grade. That's how old I was. And in my class, which I don't really think that they do this now at like the first grade level, but we had a class election where everybody voted for who they wanted to win. And in my class, George Bush won because like that's who most of our parents were voting for.
Right.
And I was kind of a contrarian kid. Like I just didn't want to do the same thing everybody else was doing, even if I didn't know why or have a good reason. So I voted for Clinton, and then I was like the outcast at the playground for a little while. And even though I didn't know, and at first grade, like, what I was, quote, voting for, unquote, or why I thought these things, it was sort of one of the first experiences I remember of wondering why people have these strong opinions about political candidates and what that meant for me and why other people were teasing me. And I think that that was sort of the first time the light came on for me and I got more curious about the process in general.
That's really interesting to be curious and getting that light bulb off when you are 6 or 7 years old. You know, you see a lot of apathy amongst people who are, you know, as old as 60 and 70, you know, and it's, I think it's good to be encouraging that in young people. And obviously you have too, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the reason for that was if you're like an independent minded person, if you are kind of contrarian, if you want to feel grown up when you're a young kid and you start to learn about this thing called voting and you learn about this mechanism through which everybody has a voice and everybody can cast a vote for the kind of world they want to live in, I could not wait to vote. I think I was more excited to vote than I was to drive a car when I was growing up. But I have a daughter now who's 9, and she's pretty much grown up seeing me involved in political causes from an activist and an advocacy perspective. So I think that her rebellion in her own way is sort of pushing back against me and not trying to be so political and saying, you know, she'll say things to me like, Mom, why can't we just enjoy life? Why does everything have to be politics? And that's another interesting contrast between the generations, possibly, that I try to be a little bit more aware of, too.
Oh, no. I hope that my son is 5, and he comes to me to vote, and he's voted 10 times. And I would be sad if he pushed back and didn't want to be interested in politics. That would be tough for me.
No, I'm sure that my daughter will be a politically active person, but it's just a contrast of, like, growing up with it so front and center in your life versus me, where I kind of came to it on my own.
So, on your own, you ran for state senate in 2018, and was that a difficult election for you?
It was a tough election. So Nebraska is really unique, and I think it's good for your listeners to know, because we're the only state that has a nonpartisan unicameral legislature. So that means that there's no party leadership, it's completely nonpartisan, and we only have one house. We call it the legislature, we don't call it the Senate, because we don't have a house or a Senate, we just have the legislature. And it's also the smallest legislature in the country with only 49 members, 49 senators. So it's the 49 of us in Nebraska who make all the laws at the state level. And the seat I ran for was an open seat because we have term limits here. And what really got me interested in running was I was working with our local public school board on a curriculum for comprehensive sex education in our schools, because in Nebraska, our sex ed curriculum hadn't been updated since 1971.
Wow.
You can think about how many things have changed in our culture and society since then, and that maybe we need to upgrade and update the curriculum we have for these kids around that. So long story short, it was a really tough battle, but we won. But that was kind of the first time that I started thinking, you know, maybe this type of organization and leadership and fighting for a cause, when we have a win in something like that, especially as a progressive in a red state, that feels so good. It feels so good for us to feel like our activism actually mattered and led to something productive. And it was a little bit intoxicating. And that's when I started thinking about pursuing politics as a career. I ran in 2018. I spent a couple years deciding if I was the right person for the job, if I understood the job. It was in 2015 that I first started looking at the seat. And I think that was really vital to my success, because by the time I announced, I had spent a lot of time meeting with community leaders, talking to donors, to make sure that there was going to be support for my candidacy. I know that in 2018, a lot of people were running as a reaction to what happened in 2016 with the blue wave and everything. And I think that that was a great catalyst to get people thinking about running for office. And I have nothing critical to say about that, except to caution people to prepare as much as possible, because just because you have an opinion doesn't always mean you're the right person to hold political office, or just because, you know, you're really good at knocking doors or canvassing doesn't mean you're the right person for that office. And so before you rush into it, you have to really, really prepare, or you're not going to do justice to the people who are electing you. And you're also going to have a tougher time campaigning.
Yeah, I've after doing 36 of these now, one of the things that stood out to me is that, one, we need more people to run, obviously. It's why I do this, but and that's why I was interested in talking with you. But two, if you're going to run, you need to really believe in yourself and know why you're running. You can't just kind of... It shows
well,
if you're
BS. Well, you talk to so many people, especially, no offense to you, but especially, you know, white males and people who traditionally have had power in our system. And you ask them why they run, and you hear so many people say, well, I always wanted to, or I always saw myself running for office, or I just wanted to give it a try. And to me, in 2019, that's just not a good enough reason.
Oh,
you
I agree.
You have to have a compelling why. You have to have a reason for doing this.
Yeah, and you know, as a person myself, one of the reasons why I got in is people are like, well, you're political, like, you should do it, and, you know, we don't have candidates, and I, you know, that was a reason for me to run, but... I'm hopeful that people like you running and others that you've recommended online, that it will kind of change the face where people who are like you will now say, okay, there's no reason I shouldn't do this now. I should do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally true. I think one other thing I'm kind of obsessed with is there's a lot of people who talk about, you know, getting out the vote. And getting out the vote is such an important thing to do, and there's so many organizations that are doing that well. But the thing that I am focused on is getting better people to run for office. Because everybody can vote, but if we don't have good candidates, nothing is going to change in terms of policy that makes a quality of life better for people in real ways. And so, you know, I would encourage anybody to watch their city council meetings, watch your state legislatures, watch your school boards. And if you see some of the things these people are doing, you come to the natural conclusion of, oh, I could do that. It's not Jefferson and Lincoln down there. It's just normal, everyday people, and I'm good enough to do that, too.
Yeah, I'm good enough to be normal and everyday.
Exactly.
So, how was your election close? And did you beat somebody who was very conservative or just another middle-of-the-road person? How did that end up happening?
Well, my campaign was really interesting. The election was interesting because of our nonpartisan system, there were three Democrats in the race and no Republicans. So the way our primary system works is, you know, since there's no party affiliation, it's just the top two vote-getters in the general election. So it ended up being me and another Democrat. And honestly, I won by a landslide.
Good.
And that was just because of canvassing. I knocked over 22,000 doors. We had town halls all the time. I ran a really strong mail program. And I had a really, really engaged group of volunteers who were super reliable. And I also used social media, I think, to my advantage pretty well. So even though in my race it was all Democrats in the race, you know, I ran a great campaign, and I had really strong ties to the community as a business owner, and I had the perspective of a young person that I think a lot of people wanted to see in the legislature.
So that's one of the things I was really glad to see about what you're tweeting about. You do use social media really well, and I feel like in Congress, you can see that there are a lot of members who may not be young, but they're learning from some of the younger members about how to use social media better than they would have otherwise. We need more young people to run. I think a lot of young people kind of see politics as an old person's game. No offense to old people, but if it's going to be representative democracy, then it needs to represent these very different voices, including people who are young, right?
Right. A big reason in Nebraska, I mean, every state is different, of course, but a big reason in Nebraska that more young people don't run for the legislature is because we get paid so little. And I think that this is a problem all over the country. In the legislature, we get paid $12,000 a year. We get no benefits. And so this isn't something you can do unless you're independently wealthy or unless you have a spouse with another income. And I'm a single parent, so that's not something I have. Or you have to have a job. outside of this job, which kind of pulls focus from work that we should be doing for the people in our state.
Right.
And so historically, that has really made it so that elective office is only something that wealthy people can afford to do, and that's a big problem. One thing that I'm doing in Nebraska to try to fight against that is fighting for us to get a raise, trying to get us benefits, and then also changing our campaign finance laws a little bit so that we can use campaign funds for things like childcare, things like transportation costs when we're doing things related to our duties as an office holder. Because when I come to Lincoln, to our capital, I need someone to take my daughter to school. I need someone to pick my daughter up from school. But, you know, when I only make $12,000 a year, I can't pay for a babysitter or daycare. And it's really prohibitive, not just for young people, but for single parents, for low-income people. And we are the folks that really reflect the population. I was elected by people to represent them because I'm like them. And I think that's when democracy works best, that's when government works best, is when we reflect the people that we serve.
Yeah, so it's not just prohibitive for those people, it's prohibitive for the state and the country because, you know, then you're having people voting on things that will affect moms, and there's no moms of young kids in the legislature.
Exactly. In our last session, we had a bill to allow people with drug convictions to receive SNAP. Right now in Nebraska, if you have a conviction for possession, use, or distribution of drugs, you can never get SNAP in your entire life. You have a lifetime ban. But if you have committed any other crime, rape, murder, whatever, like, you can get SNAP after you've served your time. So that's something that I've been working on. And one thing I realized when we were debating the bill is so many of my colleagues have no idea what SNAP or food stamps are.
Right.
They don't understand how it works. They don't know anybody who's ever been on the program. And when you don't have people making policy decisions who have been adjacent or in the social safety net, they're liable to make really bad, uninformed decisions. And that goes for any issue across mm-hmm. the board. So we need folks in office who can relate to these lived experiences that people have, or else we're not going to be making good decisions for people.
And I'm sure a lot of those people think that SNAP is something that impacts Omaha, but there's people in every community all throughout Nebraska and all throughout the country who it's just as impactful for, and sometimes way more so, because the delivery system's harder.
That's exactly right. In rural Nebraska, where food is grown to meet the needs of the nation and the world, you know, this is the nation's breadbasket here in Nebraska, food security is a huge challenge for people. But at the same time, in rural Nebraska and a lot of parts of rural America, we have a lot of pride, right? And we're really hard workers, and we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And so participation in that social safety net, in benefits that these people are entitled to, is really low. And so one other thing I'm working on in Nebraska is increasing enrollment for people who are eligible for SNAP in rural America. Because, you know, we complain a lot about our high taxes. We complain a lot about tariffs and the effects of climate change on our crops and our agricultural industry. But there are the safety net that people can access, but some of them are just too proud to do that. So that's one thing that, as a cultural shift, needs to happen to help support these people who need it. And when you hear attitudes coming out of the state legislature, like, well, these people are moochers, they're not working hard enough, when in pretty much every case they are working really hard and, you know, just falling on tough times.
And you know what? Even if they're not working hard enough, they're still human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that we often, it's easy in politics and in life to kind of throw people into categories and forget that, like, someone's not just, like, some other descriptor. They're a human being, first and foremost. They're a person with a disability, they're a person with a job, they're whatever. They're a person first.
I completely agree with you. You sometimes fall into this, like, Republican tactic of saying, well, they're taxpayers, they contribute to society, they da da da, and really everybody has inherent worth as a human being, and I don't think that we talk about that enough.
No, and I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that's an attitude that more younger people have now, for whatever reason, yeah, I don't want to get religious, but I go to a Unitarian church, and that's the first thing I talk about is the inherent worth of every person, and I feel like that's a ethos that's kind of in the younger political community right now that hopefully will become more the mainstream politics as, you know, more generations move up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love it. I think it's really important.
So you have a nonpartisan legislature. Does it feel nonpartisan, or does it still feel very rigid even though it's directed that way?
You know, every person is a partisan person, and we all have our own ideologies and beliefs, but I say, yeah, it does feel like a nonpartisan body because we don't caucus by party. In Nebraska, we caucus by issues. In Nebraska, we don't have any party leadership in the legislature. We don't have a majority or a minority leader. We don't have aisles. We don't have any whips or caucus leaders or anything like that. We're all just 49 individuals in the same room working things out. And so there might be, you know, I'm a progressive Democrat, but there might be, there's several Republicans who care a lot about climate change, for example. So we'll be working with them on that kind of thing. There's a lot of Democrats who care a lot about things like corporate financing incentives or, you know, tax cuts for new businesses. And so they'll caucus with a lot of Republicans on different things. And there's also, you know, multi-partisan views on those hot button issues like immigration or abortion. And you'll see crossover with those kinds of things. And I think that if we had partisanship as an official policy in our body, if we had party leadership, you would never see that kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
In our legislature, I sit on the left side of the room. I sit in front of a registered independent, and there's one Democrat to my back, and then all the other seven people around me are Republicans. And so a structure like that, baked into our government system, I think that that is a really good way to force compromise and collaboration, and just making sure that it's issue-based and not party or ideology-based.
Yeah, no, that sounds a lot better, because you see in every state, you see in Pennsylvania to some extent, but you definitely see it in Washington where, you know, I'm sure that there are some Republicans who believe in the science of climate change, but are just too afraid of losing to go on it. And
well, as a result, for breaking rank with your party,
right? And they're
and in Nebraska, when there's no party control, that can't happen. So it's a good thing,
right? Because there are some issues that are just too damned important, especially that one to me. So,
yeah, for real. I have a colleague, his name is Senator John McAllister, and he recently, like, had a tweet go very viral where he was kind of denouncing President Trump. He's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
He was
denouncing
Trump and talking about climate change, and he was on CNN about it, and he was on all the TV shows about it, and, you know, and everybody's kind of saying, like, oh, my God, this is so brave. He's a Republican who spoke out against Trump, but, like, in Nebraska, that would be kind of normal, even though we've definitely earned our reputation as a red state. We're definitely a conservative state. There's a lot of really backward social policies that I have a huge problem with, but it is completely normal and acceptable in Nebraska politics for, you know, an elected official to dissent from their party publicly, and there's not really any penalty for that. That's a really good thing, I think.
And I think the podcast is You Should Run. I think that the more people that run that are going to change the system, the easier it is to feel comfortable doing those things. Or you're Republican like that, or if you're a Democrat, it's going to be, no matter the party, it's going to be easier to, quote unquote, be brave. You don't have to be as brave if you are able to run and get some allies along the way and grow some friends.
Exactly. And I also think, talking about running, it's a lot easier to do that if you start as you mean to go on, meaning start as an honest politician. Don't say what you think people want to hear. Let people know who you are. I think that that was something that helped me a lot in my election is, you know, because I didn't have a Republican opponent, I had to earn the votes and trust of Republicans. So a lot of times at the doors, that ended up being a conversation where we end up saying, well, we don't agree, but I trust you, and I know that you're going to have my back because you're not going to lie to me. And it's kind of sad that that's the bar that we need to jump as politicians, but there is a lot of mistrust in government, and every day as elected officials, we are the embodiment of whether or not democracy is working. And if people can't trust the folks they elect, democracy is not working. So that has to stop with every new candidate who decides to campaign in an honest, authentic way. Because none of us are entitled to get elected.
Right.
None of us deserve to get elected. But we are entitled to share who we are and ask people to put their trust in us. And if we do that, hopefully we get to serve them.
And I think that Democrats are the party of government, you know, whether that's how people want to say it or not, and Republicans are the party of getting rid of government. And I don't mean that as pejorative. That just seems to be the way it is. And so if you're able to get people to trust their government more, and for good reason, then you're going to make it more likely that they'll be able to trust electing more progressive people.
That makes sense to me. You know,
okay,
we'll see. I think that we just need more compassion in
yeah.
politics, and we need more humanity in politics. And the best way to do that is to stop electing career politicians and start electing our friends and neighbors who have the courage and bravery to throw their hat in the ring.
So, speaking of throw your hat in the ring, again, it's called You Should Run. One of the reasons I saw you is not because I'm just searching for Nebraska politicians. You have been very vocal, and you've been talking with people from a group called Run for Something, and which I think is just a phenomenal organization. They're constantly endorsing new candidates, some of whom I've talked to on this podcast. What do you see about why more people should run, and what organizations do you think could be helpful?
Can you say the first part of that question again?
Oh, I'm sorry. So the reason I first...
Organizations are helpful in what?
The first reason I saw you was that was through Run for Something. And mm-hmm. so, you know, why should more people run for office, you know, in general, which we've talked about a lot, but what organizations do you think are helpful that are kind of not partisan necessarily,
well,
but bring attention to that?
After 2016, so many organizations not only popped up, but sort of came onto the map as organizations that help people get elected. Run for Something is a really great organization that can hook you up with resources, endorsements. And I think what candidates should do is try to think about what's unique or special about them.
Right.
Are you a young parent? Are you super into gun safety stuff? What are your issues? What makes you unique? And then go look for organizations that advocate for those kinds of things and see if they can help you get elected. See if they have resources to give to you. See if it can be volunteers or money or advice. All of those things are really useful. And I also think new candidates have to use social media, and you have to use it in a real, authentic way. So ask somebody who seems really experienced with it to help you with that, and ask organizations that are like-minded to promote what you're doing on social media as well. I think that going forward in new elections, especially as we continue to engage young people in the voting and democracy process, we sort of have to meet people where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of cases, that's online. So get active on there.
Yeah, it sounds like from following you on Twitter that you don't really have a lot of tolerance for apathy right now. Is that fair to say?
No, I think you got to get in or get out. And I also understand that everybody is being asked. Everyone has a lot asked of them right now. You can never give enough time, you can never give enough money, and most of us don't have either. We don't have
right.
any time or money, so it's a lot to ask of people. So we can't be apathetic, but we also have to help share the burden and carry each other's weight when we start to burn out. So watch out for that burnout, and to me it's a little bit like training for a marathon. You have to push yourself a little bit harder every day so you can get stronger and tougher. But you need to know when to rest, too, and when it's time to sit out. Because if you burn out, you're not going to be useful to anybody, and you're not going to be able to help the cause. So take care of yourself. But try to push yourself a little bit harder than you have before in the cause for justice and equality.
Yeah, because it's... I mean, I was saying this in another episode with Emily Segrist. She ran for state rep in Wisconsin. Like, it's kind of a war, right? Like, maybe it's different because it's not as partisan in Omaha, but there are people trying to actively keep people from getting services like SNAP, like Medicaid, etc. And
uh-huh.
if you don't get involved, they will win by default.
Yes. Yes, that's a really good point. I agree with that. You have to, you know, in a red state, the playbook that I get to use as a progressive is different than a playbook that I would get to use in a blue state or right. in a state where there was, you know, Democratic control of the governorship and the legislature and so on and so forth. So in my context, I'm really happy when we can make incremental change. It's never as far as I want us to go, but any time that we get to move the needle a little bit, we have to take that as a win and celebrate that and use that momentum to push more people into leadership and more people into office who can help us get there all the way.
And if you weren't there, granted, it might be another Democrat, it might be someone who's a progressive, but they may have, they might not be pushing the issues that you find most important, which is why you need, not you, but you as a person listening should consider getting involved, because just having a D next to your name or an I next to your name doesn't mean that your issue is going to get the priority it needs.
That's right. That's good advice, too.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing. I really appreciate you trying to move the needle in every way you can in Nebraska. Nebraska's a great state. Like I said, I spent a little bit of time there. But if you're listening, follow Nebraska Senator Megan Hunt. It's easy to follow her on Twitter. It's just Nebraska Megan. So that one, you don't have to spell weirdly. That's easy to figure out. And good luck in what you're doing in Nebraska. I'd love to follow up and find out how things are going.
Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it.
All right, I'm going to